Session 2, this course on church planting. I want to address the topic of why start new churches. I recall a conversation with a man shortly after we'd moved to Nashville. He said to me, "You're here to start a new church. Well, there are plenty of churches in this town already. Why don't you just find one that's struggling and go help it?" Well, I received that piece of friendly advice from a nice Christian man. He'd even attended the flagship church of our network of churches in California while on a business trip. And he didn't enjoy attending, but he couldn't see the need to start another new church in his city. I had gone to see him with great anticipation of his eagerness to assist in our church planting efforts. Here's how I met him. On our first Saturday in Nashville, my father-in-law was visiting and helping us get moved into our new home, and he and I were going on a busy four-lane street to get something he needed so he could hook up the washer and dryer. When I noticed in the car ahead of us, that was a cassette tape binder that looked like the set of tapes I had in my car. I started waving my tape binder at the guy driving the car in front of me when we stopped at a traffic light. And he turned around and looked at me, and I waved some more, and he pulled into a parking lot. And I got out of my car and went to talk to him. Church planters do these kind of things all the time. Okay. Well, yes, the tapes were by the same pastor, but no, they weren't his tapes. He said, "But if you'll call so-and-so," he gave me the name, "I'm sure he'll be glad to know someone who's been to that church, too. He really liked it when he went there, and he bought a bunch of these tapes, and he's been giving them to everyone." Well, I made an appointment to see the giver of the tapes. I just knew for sure he was going to be our first church member. Instead of running alongside the Ethiopian's chariot and instantly leading him to Christ, I had come across somebody who knew what kind of church I wanted to start. And from the looks of this big business he owned, whoa, what kind of tither would he be? Well, instead, I got his free advice. "Plenty of churches here already." He was right. About 600, according to the phone book. "Why don't you find one that's struggling and go help it?" Nice guy. But did he realize how his suggestion would have been received if I had walked into the corner church and said to the pastor, "I hear this church is struggling. I've come to help it." I replied that no, I felt that we were there to start a new church, but thanked him and went my way. So a good businessman like him, who couldn't see starting a new church when there were many half-empty church buildings all over town, he'd expanded his own business only when he had in order to keep up with the demand for his products. So why start new churches anyway? If our fellow believing Christians can't see the need for it, how are we going to convince the ones who we're really after, the unchurched, the not-yet believer? When they're cynical already about the number of churches dotting the landscape, and all they see, to them it all looks the same. Well, let's begin with the most important reason to start a new church. New churches are the most effective evangelistic tool there is. Ed Stetzer, in the Nehemiah Project, church planting material, points out that among evangelical churches, those under 3 years old will win 10 people to Christ every year for every 100 church members. Those churches 3 to 15 years old will win 5 people per year. And after age 15, the number drops to 3 per year. Again, that's 10 churches under 3 years old will win 10 people for every 100 people in the church. Those churches 3 to 15 years old will win 5 people per year, and after 15, the number drops to 3 per year. For many established churches, church is little more than a holy huddle, getting us 4 and no more together with little thought of adding to the church of the Lord Jesus Christ. Indeed, many churchgoers, have few, if any, unchurched friends, as the demands of keeping the organization going drive people more and more inward to maintain our programs and our buildings and our services. Stetzer comments, "So the fact is, the longer a church is in existence, the fewer people it will win to Christ in proportion to its attendance. That fact alone ought to challenge established churches to be focused on reaching the lost and to not lose that focus. But it also ought to challenge us to recognize that new churches are more effective at reaching the lost than older, established churches." While this course on church planting is being offered through a theological seminary, something important needs to be kept in mind. And there's a negative correlation between the amount of education a pastor has and the amount of evangelism the pastor does. As with the pastor, so with the people. Roland Allen, in his book, Missionary Methods, St. Paul's or Ours, stated his belief that educational attainment is inversely proportional to evangelistic ability. In other words, the more education you have, the less evangelism you tend to do. Let me repeat that again. This is some people say Roland, some people say Roland. It's R-O-L-A-N-D, Allen. In his book, Missionary Methods, St. Paul's or Ours, he makes a statement, the more education you have, the less evangelism you tend to do. So, explaining that. So, if in our pursuit of education, of course, I here in this setting, firmly believe in education, we've lost the ability to relate to real people in the real world and win them to Christ, largely because many pastors are never around unchurched people. Well, if we're not doing it ourselves, we need to clear the path so that new generations of church planters can be raised up and sent out to evangelize the people pastors are no longer able to reach. As the church planters make the transition to being pastors, they can be encouraged to add theological tools and skills. Well, that's the typical Trinity student profile, someone who has been in ministry already for a number of years and has felt the need to add to their knowledge in order to be more effective as more effective leaders. And if I may add another selling point for doing distance education, by staying in your field of ministry while enrolled in classes, you are less likely to be adversely affected by being insulated from real life. I am glad I had a local church connection while in college and seminary, and being with the people every weekend was a needed dose of reality. However, with classes during the week and trying to tie up loose ends with the church on weekends, my own contact with unchurched people began to be increasingly limited. It was not until attempting to church plant 10 years later that the disconnect with unchurched people became an issue for me. Later in this course, when we address the subject of who should church plant, one of the major attributes of a church planter is the ability to relate to the unchurched. And I think that this area above all has affected my own church planting efforts. Again, how this matter of education relates to church planting is that where there have been church planting movements, there has been a mobilization of church planters. Instead of waiting for someone to complete 4 years of college and another 3 years of seminary before we give them the credentials to do ministry, let's provide opportunities for people to do ministry with training while on the field and opportunities for additional education along the way. Let's get them out there starting home groups and multiplying those groups and seeing them recruit and train and deploy and monitor more group leaders. The ordination service I described in the first session was a show us your puppies and we'll give you some papers ordination. The church planter had shown he could gather, disciple, and care for people. And he had shown he was living a life consistent with biblical teachings as far as character and calling. And we, the other pastors there to ordain him, gladly affirmed what was clearly evident to others. Ed Stetzer comments, "The truth is, whenever a church planting movement has occurred, it happened when God called people have stepped up to be anointed by God for the task. Yes, they receive training on the field, and they may ultimately receive it in a seminary or a Bible college. But also, ultimately, when we say, you must have a seminary degree to pastor a church, we limit God. In addition, we're condemning New Testament church plants since the seminary had not yet been set up in Jerusalem. So in reality, Ed Stetzer says, when God called people answer the call and receive training as they plant churches and reach the lost, God can use people and a church planting movement can break out. Before leaving this sidebar about education, as it applies to church planters, perhaps American church leaders in Western Europe need to consider the manner in which pastors are trained and released in the parts of the world where the church is growing most rapidly, Africa, South America, Asia, where church planters are being rapidly deployed. How many potentially effective church planters have been considered ineligible because they lacked either education or the means of support for their families to go off and attain the required education? My father was almost 40 years old before completing his seminary education, and at the time the only option for him was to go to the closest seminary, 250 miles away, and be away from Monday morning until late Friday night from the family in the country church where he was a pastor. You Trinity guys have it so easy. Well, not really, of course. You have to squeeze these lessons in with your busy schedules, but you know what I'm talking about. A commitment to church planting may require a fresh look at church history where church planting is concerned. There must always be room in our church systems for a cobbler like William Carey or a shoe clerk like Dwight L. Moody. And there needs to be room for someone to go out and try and even fail and get back up and try again. Roland Allen's statement about the more education, the less evangelism a pastor does should be a word of warning for us as pastors as well about keeping those who are supernaturally gifted in the area of evangelism, to keep them out there interacting with people in the world and not allow them to become overwhelmed by church administration or ministry that is confined to church people. Keep them mining the veins of gold among their unsaved friends. We do that in other areas of ministry. We keep the counselors counseling and not trying to be something they're not. We keep the teachers teaching. Well, let's find ways to keep the evangelist evangelizing. When the businessman in Nashville suggested instead of starting a new church that I go help a struggling church, he was recommending something he would never do for a fellow business associate. Hey, Tom, let me help you get your struggling business going. And not many pastors, at least the ones I've known, would be open to somebody moving to town and saying, hey, pastor, let me help you get this church off the ground. For me, a number of red flags would go up. What's this guy's agenda? And I heard about a group of friends who tried to do something like that. Four couples who had been meeting together for a weekly home group and decided that they'd help a small church. For a time, everything went okay, but it became clear after a few months that this group had their own agenda. They wanted to make the church into their own image. And when they left in mass, others left with them. No, as much as struggling churches need help, that's not the way to help. This resistance to new churches is a variation of a parish church mindset. We're just one church per town. Peter Wagner puts it this way. Some are reluctant to start new churches for the fear of harming those churches that are currently located in the target community. They feel that doing so would create undesirable competition between brothers and sisters in Christ. I mentioned that here, in that in more cases than not, a new church in the community tends to raise the religious interest of the people in general, and if handled properly, can be a benefit to existing churches. That which blesses the kingdom of God as a whole also blesses the churches that are truly a part of the kingdom, end quotation. And Wagner refers to a town in Hawaii where a Baptist church was planted. The church plant raised the spiritual level so high that a neighboring church witnessed a 100% attendance growth, and another church saw an attendance increase of 150%. So new churches are good things. Even among churches of the same denomination, it has been found that contrary to conventional wisdom, congregations usually benefit from interdenominational competition. While it's impossible to isolate one factor as being decisive, the presence of two or more congregations with the same denominational affiliation usually results in a higher level of congregational health and vitality than if just one congregation has a denominational monopoly in that community. The benefits of raising the spiritual temperature in a city, is something I witnessed shortly after the youth revival at our church, where I gave my life to the Lord. Within a few weeks, the church down the street also had special youth meetings, and more young people came to believe in Jesus. Did the church down the street suddenly plan a youth rally out of fear that all the kids would start coming to our church? Well, who cares? The kingdom was expanded as more opportunities were given to hear and respond to the gospel. And that's what happens with new churches, too. So let's build up the fire in our cities. While the businessman may have counted 600 churches in the area, if he'd been willing to check the facts, he would have found that the church-to-population rate is actually declining, at least in the United States. Here's some numbers. In 1900, there were 27 churches for every 10,000 Americans. In 1950, there were 17 churches for every 10,000 Americans. By 1996, there were 11 churches for every 10,000 Americans. Now, while some may object, but hasn't the size of churches increased? And the answer is actually no. The median church size has stayed about the same as it was 100 years ago, while the number of churches has declined. While yes, there are more large churches than before, mega churches with thousands of people attending, the median size has nevertheless stayed about the same. See, we need more churches. Some other cold, hard facts that we can get all sentimental about where it concerns the beautiful old church building on the corner of Main and Church. Well, just think about it. It's harder to restart a dead church than it is to start a new one. It's easier to start a new church than it is to revitalize one that has been started into a pattern of decline. Another item. Buildings should never be a justification for strategy. See, buildings aren't enough. It's people that need to be the justification for our strategy. If people are in love with their church buildings, sometimes they lose their love for unchurched people. Another item. The vast majority of new congregations in the United States and Canada reach their peak in size during the first 2 or 3 decades of their existence, and then remain on a plateau in size or begin to shrink in numbers. Another item. Church planting is the most cost-effective means of winning the lost. Each dollar invested in church planting wins far more than those in existing church expenditures. That doesn't mean that we should be helping establish churches, but there must be more of a focus on church planting. There needs to be a balance. The cry in Christian circle isn't, let's ignore established churches, but there's a tendency to ignore church planting. So we need to focus more attention on the process. Furthermore, healthy church plants become self-supporting after a few years, thus making those dollars reproduce, not just short term, but until Christ returns. And those items are from the material provided by Nehemiah Project. An effective evangelistic strategy must include both church planting and church strengthening. But since this is a course about church planting, that's where the emphasis is going to be for now. Well, why are new churches more effective in evangelism? As Ed Stetzer says, perhaps the simplest explanation of this pattern is that when new congregations are organized around evangelism and reaching people not actively involved in the life of any worshiping community, that's what it's about, that they're organized around evangelism. By contrast, powerful internal institutional pressures tend to encourage long-established churches to allocate most of their resources to the care of members. So you want to avoid decline? Then make the turn to becoming an outreach-oriented church. Get organized around evangelism and outreach instead of being focused on high-maintenance programs. My first church job was of the high-maintenance category. I'm grateful for the job. Summer youth worker at a church. But in typical fashion for churches of the day, the job was centered around the church building. It started by having a second floor area of the building renovated as a youth center. Ping pong table, pool table, other recreational equipment. And then they decided they needed someone to run the place. And being moderately skilled in both ping pong and pool, I was qualified for the job. Well, that's high maintenance. In addition to the renovation, taking a loft behind the choir loft and making it into usable space, adding recreational equipment, putting in heating and air conditioning, and then there was my whopping salary for the summer. That all adds up to a big investment in improving the ability of ping pong players and pool shooters. The build it and they will come strategy is not always effective. And that summer I spent many days alone in that loft because the kids were more interested in swimming at the public pool than they were in playing pool. Well, knowing the pastor and leadership of that church, they would have justified the expense by saying, we're trying to reach kids. But more outreach occurred in a low-maintenance program, a week of day camp at a local state park, where church kids and neighborhoods came, and some of them became Christians through the day camp. Here was borrowed facilities. We borrowed the facilities of the state park. We put the program on, and it was a great program. Well, becoming outreach-oriented means going beyond advertising on the local religion pages and seeking to appeal to already churched people and deliberately going after the not-yet believer. There's a myth in church circles, the myth that the United States and Canada are already evangelized. Well, if this is what being evangelized looks like, you know, over 1 million abortions a year, violence, crime. Well, that's what being evangelized looks like. It's staggering to think how being unevangelized might look. As Alan Walker said, our culture is dominated no longer by a biblical Christian worldview, but an echo of truth. Are they evangelized? Hardly, when the estimated North American lost population is now in excess of 200 million. And in Canada alone, between 92 and 98% are unchurched. Sadly, North America is the only continent where Christianity is not growing. By some estimates, half of all churches in the United States did not add one new member through conversion growth last year. And according to Thomas Clegg, the United States of America is now the third largest mission field in the world. So I should have told that businessman in Nashville that there were many good reasons to start a new church. Most of all, that as Peter Wagner says, church planting is the single most effective evangelistic methodology under heaven. But I didn't say any of those things. I was too stunned that this nice Christian man would not automatically discern the reason for me being in town to start a new church. Well, in our next session, we'll look at the most important reason of all to start new churches. Because it's biblical. Because church planting is ultimately about going after the unchurched, it's important to be able to do what 1 Peter 3:15 says. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope you have. Well, what about this for a hope? I hope to see a church established that will help people avoid going to hell. And until everyone in this city is on their way to heaven, we're going to need lots of new churches. I want to help this new church get started. And I look forward to our next discussion.